We're holding on page Mem Bays and Tainus Oisvog. The Gemara is now going to bring in a piece which the that which at the end of it, we're going to mention something in connection with the rain and the dew, and that's the connection with our Perek and with our Sobia. So the Gemara says, Amr Shmuel Achmeni Amr Yonason, Shloisha Shalu Shaloika. There were three people in Tanakh who asked something of Hashem improperly, meaning they didn't specify to make sure that it's going to come out the way they should expect it to. L'shnayim ashivum kahogen, two of them were answered properly, and they got what worked out well. What worked out well, la'echad ashivu shaloi, and the one was answered improperly with something that turned out to be disastrous. Ve'elu hein Eliezer Eved Avraham v'Shaul ben Kish v'Yiftach Hagilon. So they're as follows. Eliezer Eved Avraham dichtiv. The pasuk says when Eliezer was coming to Choron to look for a wife for Yitzchak, he says, moyim, the girls from the city, the daughters of the people of the city are going to come out and draw water. Naira, and the girl that I say to her, please give me a drink, etc. And she'll water and she'll give me a drink and water my camels. She's the one who you've chosen for Yitzchak. Now you might say then, so what happens if she's lame? What happens if she's blind? Is that still going to be the right one? Heshivuhu. So he should have, in other words, he should have thought to ask whether he should have thought to include in his tefillah that the girl who comes out and will be suitable physically and then spiritually and so forth. However, he was answered appropriately. Rivka, and Rivka came who had no mumim and any other problems. Shob and Kish. Now Rashi and Tosfos both point out you could now if she had a blatant mum, then obviously he'd see it and he wouldn't ask her in the first place. But she could easily have a mum that he might not notice at first glance. Tosfos gives examples. For example, she might have a wooden leg, so you wouldn't notice. She's still able to walk on it normally, but nevertheless. And the same thing with her eyes. There might be, for example, where she her eyes look normal, but then one of them doesn't work or whatever. So he should have thought to ask for that. But nevertheless, Hashem gave him Rivka anyway.
Leg is a little problematic. If somebody's walking on a wooden leg, you can tell.
Not always. I guess it depends.
The eyes.
Okay. I don't know. In any case, I don't know. I haven't known a lot of people who walked around with wooden legs, so I don't know. Maybe some of them can hide it better than others.
Yeah.
It could have been mental, but yeah, et cetera.
That's
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Gemara mentions Chigeras Aisuma, so therefore Tosfos has to find examples where she could be lame or be blunt and or be blind, and he wouldn't know. But yeah, okay. Next, Shol ben Kish Dichtiv. The pasuk says during the time when Goliath is standing over there and mocking the Jewish people and going on every day, 40 days straight, it's going to come up. It's going to come up in a couple of weeks in Daf HaYomi of Sota during Sfira. The whole story with Goliath. So he's standing every day over there for 40 days straight and taunting the Jewish people. You're all cowards. You don't have anybody who can fight against me, etc. So when David comes to the camp and starts asking around what's going on, they tell him that Shaul has announced. Whoever strikes Goliath and kills him, the king will give him great riches. He'll give him his daughter as in marriage. And he'll make his father's family free of taxes. Now, the giving him great wealth and the remitting taxes, no problem. No matter who he is, they can do that. But the daughter, what's going to happen if the champion who comes and defeats Goliath is an Eved or a Mamzer, and he can't marry off his daughter to that? Hashivuhu, so you should have thought to mention that. Hashivuhu Kahagan, nevertheless, Hashem answered him properly. Vinizdam and Lloyd David, and David came who had none of those problems. A lot of times the Gemara calls him Shol ben Kish. I don't know why. It's a good question. Why Taka? Is there another Shol that they have to descend? Did that definitely? This is Shol HaMelech we're talking about. Yeah, but you're asking why he doesn't call him Shol HaMelech? I don't know. It's a good question. So Tosfos actually points out there's another example. We have the example of Kolev ben Rashi and Tosfos actually both point out. You have the example that it describes in Sefer Yoshua, and again it tells over the story in Sefer Shoftim involving Kolev ben Yefuneh. Where the Psukim described over there was a city in Eretz Yisrael that they were having a hard time conquering called Kiryas Sefer, also known as Dvir. And so Kolev announces that whoever can conquer that city, then I'll marry off my daughter, I'll marry off my daughter Achsa to him. So don't we have the same problem? What happens if the guy's a Mamzer or whatever? So there's a number of different answers why the Gemara doesn't mention it. Rabbeinu Hananel says very simply, it's the same kind of thing as with Shaul and his daughter. So fine, the Gemara doesn't have to give every single example of somebody who offers his daughter in marriage as a reward for somebody doing something. But Rashi and Tosfos both point out that, and again, this may be one of those proofs that Rashi over here on Tainus is not really from Rashi, because if so, if it was, then why would Tosfos have to repeat it? Anyway, the Gemara tells us in Tmura that Kiryas Sefer, when Kolev is saying we need to conquer Kiryas Sefer, it doesn't just mean the physical city of Kiryas Sefer, it means there were hundreds of halachas that had been forgotten during the period of mourning after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, and now they are now, so now Kolev is announcing whoever can conquer that, in other words, to restore those forgotten halachas, so therefore he knows that a mamzer or a He knows that a mamzer or an eved or whatever is not going to be of the caliber to have the siyata d'shmaya, to have, Marashah calls it, the ruach hakodesh, to be able to come up with such a thing, and therefore he doesn't have to worry. Therefore he doesn't have to worry that the guy might be an eved or a mamzer. So therefore the Gemara doesn't list that. In fact, there's an explanation on that Gemara in Tmura that the two things is really hainu hach. Every part of Eretz Yisrael corresponds to some part of Torah. Torah is the blueprint of the world, and most especially of Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, when there were halachas that they had forgotten, and in the end, actually, the Gemara tells us over there, based on these psukim, that Osniel ben Knaz, who was Kolev's younger half-brother, was able to restore those halachas with his deep knowledge of Torah. So what it is when those halachas were forgotten, the corresponding part of Eretz Yisrael, namely Kiryas Sefer, was withstanding conquest. And as soon as they were able to relearn those halachas, then the physical city automatically falls because its ruchniyistika source has now been restored. Anyway, the point is, so therefore that would be a reason why the Gemara doesn't mention him, because in that case, Taka, there would have been nothing to worry about, because of necessity, anybody who would do that would be a great Talmud Chacham, and he wouldn't be a mamzer or nasi. Tosfos also brings up the question, why by Eliezer do we not say that she might be a mamzeres or a shifcho or whatever? Why by him do we only mention that she might be a chigeres a summa? So Tosfos brings from Rashi that when it comes to Eliezer, it's irrelevant to talk about a mamzeres. The Torah hadn't been given yet. The whole concept of mamzeres didn't exist. And also Tosfos says that maybe even if she was a mamzeres or shifcho or whatever, as long as Avraham had asked that she be from his family, as long as she is, then it doesn't really matter what her status is in halach. Kiddushim over here from the Machaber of Ein Yaakov says something similar that brings the same thing that we don't really care as long as we want that she should be physically beautiful and graceful and whatever, and be an appropriate mother for Yitzchak's children, for the whole Jewish people. If her yichus is not that great, as long as she's from David's family, then maybe Eliezer wouldn't care so much. And then on the other hand, when it comes to Shoal, we're not so worried if the guy's a chigger or a summer or whatever. But we're concerned if he's an eved or a mamzer, and that he shouldn't marry his daughter. Anyway, so those two, again, even though they had asked improperly, they hadn't thought to add those details, nevertheless, Hashem answered them properly, and they came with the right candidate. Maushal also adds, by the way, that in the case of Eliezer, it wasn't such a concern that she'd be a mamzeres or a shivcha, because we find that, so we find like this, when Eliezer first met her and she gave him the drink and gave him his and watered his camels and all that. Afterward, the Pasuk says he gave her the jewelry, and then he asked her, Bas mi'at, whose daughter are you? And she tells him she's Basuel's daughter. When he tells over the story to the family later on in the same parak, he tells him in the opposite order. I asked her what family she's from, and she told me, Bas Basuel anoichi, and then I gave her the jewelry. So Rashi on the Pasuk explains over there that he had given her the jewelry first because he had such bitachon that everything is going to work out. But Maharsha says over here, it might be ein muktamam ochabat Torah. In fact, he did ask her first before he gave her the jewelry. Well, then good. In that case, if she was a shifcha or a mamzeres, then he would have stopped things right there and not continued. So that's why the Gemara doesn't bother mentioning that point and only mentions the point that she might have been lame or blind.
Being a shlich of Avraham Avinu, it's going to be good.
Well, this is also true, but on the other hand, the fact is, the Gemara is saying it was still careless of him to not mention these points. But yeah. Say what?
We learned
that depends. If you there are mefarshim who learn that it doesn't apply within one narrative in the Torah, but Maharsha is saying that not necessarily is that the case. Maybe Maharsha would say over here, because we find when Eliezer told over the story that he reversed the order, that itself alerts us to that earlier it was also out of order, even though it's in within one short story. But you're right. I mean, b'chlal, the whole concept of Ein Mukdam U'Me'achar b'Torah, we know the concept exists, and the Gemara and Midrashim mention it here and there. Nashi brings it in all places, but for example, the Ramban tries to minimize it as much as possible. Where absolutely necessary, then yeah, we have to say that. But other than that, for example, the Ramban, Le Beshitta, tries to say that many things that Rashi says, as an example of Ein Mukdam U'Me'achar b'Torah, the Ramban says is not so. So yeah. Okay. Next, Yiftach HaGilod. Then we have the case of Yiftach. So the Psukim describe in Sefer Shoftim, doing Yiftach was one of the later Shoftim. In his times, you had the Ammonim were oppressing and harassing the Jewish people for 18 years. Finally, they found Yiftach, who's known to be a strong warrior, and they have him, they put him in charge. He's going to lead the campaign against Ammon, and he's going to be the leader of the Jewish people from then on. The most of the story is in Haftorah, Parshas Korach. So you have Psukim over there. Yiftach sends messengers to Melech B'nei Ammon. What's going on? What do you have against us? Melech B'nei Ammon offers me a land for peace deal. You give us back our land, you'll have peace. Yiftach tells him nothing doing, and they go to war. Before they go to war, Yiftach makes a neder. Whatever comes out first from the doors of my house, to greet me, V'shuvi v'shalom b'nei Ammon, when I return in peace from fighting against b'nei Ammon, v'hoya l'Hashem, then that thing will be for Hashem, v'halisihu oila, and I will bring it as a korban oila. And now, yochal afilu dover tome. Now, he's not specifying, it could even be a dover tome, it could be a non-kosher animal, or whatever. So v'shivu shalai kohagen, he was answered from Shemayim improperly, v'nizdam l'lai bitoi, and his daughter came out. That part we don't have in the Haftorah of Chukas, and the Temonim actually read the whole story until the end of the Perek, but the general minhag of the Haftorah in most Kehillos is we stop after his victory over Ammon, but you have in the following Psukim that his daughter came out over there and he's all crushed by it, and in the end, so now, many of the Mephoshim explain that it doesn't mean, now the Gemara over here is going to take it as that he actually sacrificed her as a korban, and we'll talk about how he could do such a thing and what happened. We'll get to that in a second. But anyway, many of them Foshim say that not necessarily. When he says Vahoyal Hashem Baalisiu Ola, he may mean if it's something that's appropriate to bring as an Ola, then I'll bring it as an Ola. And if not, it's going to be devoted to Hashem. And in the case of a person, that would mean in the end, what he did according to those Mephoshim is he had her, she's going to live by herself. She's going to spend all her time davening and then connecting with Hashem and never marry and never have a family, etc. It was still a tragedy, but not necessarily the same as the Gemara is saying. But the Gemara obviously is taking over here that he literally sacrificed her as a korban. The Medrash also, the Medrash brings a machlokas on the subject. Maharsha brings it over here. One opinion is that what he should have done is at least he should have, obviously he shouldn't bring her as a korban, nor should he have had her be a hermit like that. What he should have done is he should have figured out her monetary value. It's called domim in halacha, and give that to Hekish. And that would have been the way to fulfill his neder. The other opinion in the Medrash is he wouldn't have even had to do that. His neder was not even chal in the first place. Rashi and Tosfos both bring over here in detail, actually Now, first of all, there's the question. So, Taka, why? What does Hashem play favorites? Why is it that with Eliezer and with Shol everything worked out beautifully, and with Yiftach not? So, an answer that a number of the Mephoshim give independently is with them, it didn't affect the covet of Hashem. They're not saying anything that would impinge on the covet of Hashem. If the girl who comes out and draws water for Eliezer, etc., is a chigera seisuma, not the best thing, but nevertheless, it doesn't affect the covet of Hashem. And same thing if the champion who defeats Goyas is an eved, mamzer, fine. Sure, we'll have to tell him, sorry, the deal's off because you can't marry my daughter, but it wouldn't affect the covet of Hashem. But here, Yiftach is how can such a careless neder, whatever it is, I'll bring it as an oila to Hashem without even taking into consideration whether it's going to be something kosher for a korban or not. So therefore, Hashem answered him in an inappropriate way, and it was his daughter that came out of the house first. Now, so this explains how Long afterwards, the Navi says to the Jewish people, Hatsori en b'gilad, isn't there any balsam in gilad? Sori is like we have in the ingredients of the Torah, Hatsori v'atzipora, and it's a sap from a certain tree. They used it as a spice, but they also used it back then as medicine. So isn't there any medicine in gilad? And that refers to Yiftach, who came from gilad and lived in gilad. Isn't there any medicine over there? Im roifei ein sham, isn't there any doctor over there? Meaning a ruchnistic doctor. It should have been that Pinchas, who was the Gadol Ador of that time, once he found out about this, he should have gone to be Matur Neder, Yiftach's Neder. So why didn't he do that? The Pasuk later on, Yumi is bemoaning the fact, how come it is there was no doctor and there was no there was no medicine to offer for Yiftach. And the Pasuk continues, Ki madua lai osa aruchas bas ami. The Pasuk there in Yumi continues, why is the healing of the daughter of my people not taken place? Which means that Yumi is hinting at that daughter of my people, that daughter of Yiftach hundreds of years earlier, where why wasn't something done to prevent her from having to be brought as a korban or being isolated as the case may be? Because in other words, again, Pinchas should have gotten involved. Now, Rashi, now first of all, again, Maharsha says, according to the two opinions in Bereshis Rabbah over there, not necessarily would there even have needed to be Ataras Nedorim at all, because according to the opinion that his neder was never chal in the first place, and there's no Ataras Nedorim necessary. In that case, though, Pinchas should have told Yiftach, you know what, your neder is invalid in the first place, there's nothing you need to do. But if we say that it was a valid neder, then Pinchas at least should have been Matur Neder. Why didn't they? So Rashi brings from the same Medrash that says that neither one wanted to go to the other. Yiftach was too proud. He figured, I'm the leader of the Jewish people. They just appointed me the leader, so I shouldn't have to go to Pinchas. If it's important, let Pinchas come to me. Meanwhile, Pinchas was a Navi, and he didn't want to come to Yiftach, and Tosfos brings slightly differently, that Pinchas said, you know what, I'm a Navi, and if Yiftach needs something, he should come to me. So between the two of them, nothing happened, and therefore the tragedy happened with the daughter of Yiftach. Tosfos brings from...
Battle of too much pride.
It was a battle of too much pride on both sides, yeah. So Tosfos in fact brings from that same Medrash that both of them, Rashi brings it on the Psukim over there in Shoftim, both of them ended up getting punished. Yiftach, the Pasuk says afterwards, so he was Shofet for 6 years. Then the Pasuk says, Vayikover ba'orei Gilad. He was buried in the cities of Gilad. Now, how do you bury a person in more than one place? So, okay, Mephoshim say it means in one of the cities, but the Medrash says it means that his body started falling apart. Limbs fell off him while he was alive, and each one, as it fell off, they buried it in a different place. So it comes out that pieces of him were buried all over Gilad. That was his punishment. As far as Yiftach, the Pasuk mentions him in Divrei Yomim when it mentions the various head Levim and Kohenim and whatever, and it mentions Pinchas, it says on him, Lefonim Hashem Imai. Formerly, Hashem was with him, implying, but not anymore. Hashem took away his nevuah from him because of the way he acted in this affair. So now the Gemara says, Uchtiv. Now you have another pasuk that bears on the story of Yiftach. And for this, we have to know that we have like this. In those times, there was a goyish ritual for various avodah zarahs, Baal and whatever, of sacrificing children to them, which, of course, the Torah says is completely osur. We have examples. So, by the way, that's not the same thing as passing them through to Moloch. The Gemara explains, and the Rambam brings in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, the Moloch business was only that the child is passed through between two fires, but is not burned. The Rambam specifically makes a point. This is not the same as burning children for Avodah Zarah, which is going to be the subject of what we're dealing with over here. But three times in Tanakh, we find examples of people who sacrificed children or were going to sacrifice children, seemingly l'shem shamayim, and now the Gemara is going to deal with all of those. The first one is Avram Avinu by the Akedah. Hashem tells him, Ba'alei Rosham La'ola, and as far as he knows, he's bringing Yitzchak as a korban. In the end, in fact, actually, at the end, when Hashem tells him, Al tishlach yodcha el anar, so the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, that Avraham says to Hashem, what's going on over here? You told me to bring him as an Ola, and now you're telling me don't. And Hashem explains, same, I only told you about how Rosham La'ola, bring him up. Now that you brought him up, then that's it, the mission accomplished, and you can bring him down. So Hashem is saying, in other words, I never really intended that you should sacrifice him in the first place. The other two examples, the second example is Yiftach. The third example that the Gemara is going to tell us over here is the story of Mesha Melech Moya. So in Sefer Melachim, in Melachim Beis Perek Gimel, it tells the story. At one point, so you have Moab had been ruled over by the kingdom of Yehuda ever since the time of David HaMelech. David had defeated and conquered them and made them vassals of his. That lasted 100, 100 odd years or so. Now, in the eventually, once the kingdom split up, once you have Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda, so Moab continued to be a vassal of Malchus Yisrael. Until the time of one of the sons of one of the sons of Ahab, after Ahab was killed in battle, and Moab revolted and made themselves independent. So now the new king of Yisrael, Yehoram, his name is, makes up a coalition together with Yehoshaphat, Malach Yehuda, and together with the king of Edom, who was actually a governor appointed by Yehoshaphat, to go. The three of them would get their armies together and fight against Moab. Whole long story over there. They almost ran out of water on the way. Elisha had to give them a special nevuah. We learned about at the end of Megillah where Elisha says, "Why should I even look at you, Yehoram? You're a Rasha." We learned from that you're not supposed to look at the face of a Rasha. Anyway, Bekitzer, Elisha tells them there's going to be a tremendous nest. First of all, you're going to have water here in the desert when you're not even going to see rain, because the Medrash explains it rained in Edom and the water trickled all the way to where they were in the desert. So they didn't even see the rain, but they had plenty of water. And on top of that, the Moavim are going, and on top of that, you're going to defeat the Moavim very comprehensively. And they did, and they're going through the Pesukim, describe over there how they're rampaging through Moab and devastating everything. Now, at the end of that parak, the Pesuk says that Mesha, Melech Moab, took as B'noi B'chore, his firstborn son, by Ya'aleo Ola Alachoyma. And he brought him as an ola on top of the wall. Now, what's going on over there? So you have the Gemara elsewhere mentions machlokes whether Mesha was doing that in honor of his avodah zarah. Is he trying to bring a korban to his avodah zarah kmosh in order that should help him, or is he mistakenly thinking that Hashem wants this kind of thing? So the Gemara tells of a discussion that Mesha has with his advisors. He asks them, "Well, what's going on that these Jewish people are having such tremendous nisim happen to them? What's their secret?" And his advisors tell him, you know, their ancestor Avraham was ready to bring a son as a korban to the Jewish God. So Mesha says, "Okay, well, you know what? I can do the same thing as well." And so he does that. So now the Gemara over here is taking the same view that this is a korban that Mesha brought, thinking in his goyish cup that this is what Hashem wants. So now the Gemara is going to focus on that. Rashi, by the way, mentions an interesting point. There is a pasuk elsewhere. There's a pasuk in the Navi Amos that mentions that Hashem is going to punish Moav because of what the one time the king of Moav, Al Sofrei Atzmus Melech Edom Wasid, because he took the bones of the king of Edom and burned them to make wine. Now, the Ohr Mefarshim will say that that's the same as this story. They understand that B'nai B'choroi doesn't mean Mesha's own son. It means that he managed to capture the crown prince of Edom and brought him as a korban over there, as a pagan korban on the wall over there. But the Gemara over here is obviously not taking it that way, and Rashi says that's a different story. We're not dealing with that over here. Be that as it may, anyway, so now the Gemara is going to deal with, so again, we have three examples in history of human sacrifice, or almost human sacrifice, seemingly l'shem shamayim. So now you have like this. Yirmiyahu HaNavi, at the end of the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, he's faced with a problem that there are Jews who are actually doing that in honor of Avodah Zarah, right outside Yerushalayim, that an area over there called Gei Ben Hinnom, which is where we get the name Gehenim from, where they were doing that, where they had a place set up over there for those kinds of korbanos of children to Avodah Zarah. So twice in Sefer Yirmiyah, he goes and then tells the people off for it with a nevuah of how, and says that Hashem doesn't want any such thing. So now the pasuk uses a triple expression. So one of those two times. So one of those two times is in Yirmiyah Perek Zayin. There it actually only mentions two of the expressions that the Gemara is going to say over here. Rashi points out the pasuk that the Gemara is bringing is actually the second time, which has all three of them. And the first one is in Haftorah, Parshas Tzav, so people are a little more familiar with it. Therefore, they thought that's what the one the Gemara is referring to. But in fact, the Gemara is referring to later on Yirmiyah Perek Yud Tes. The Pesukim describe there, Hashem tells Yirmiyah at one point to go to that Gei Ben Hinnom, to that area over there, take along with him an earthenware bottle, and he's to say this whole nevuah of how Hashem is going to punish everybody over there and destroy the Beis Hamikdash and send everybody into Golos because they're doing such horrible things. Then Hashem tells him you should break the bottle, and you tell them the same way as this bottle is broken and can never be put back together, the same way the Zera of Churban and Golos is final unless everybody does Tshuva. So Rashi calls it Parshas Bak. It's the section in Yumiya that talks about the bottle. Anyway, so there it uses the triple expression, which the Gemara is now going to quote. Hashem says, you should know, so you're bringing these korbanos to Getchkes, and you're thinking that such a thing is valid, maybe even to Hashem. You should know, I never commanded it. I never spoke such a thing. And it never even came into my mind. So that refers to these three incidents. The Asher Lo Tzivisi is referring to the story with Mesha, that he thought he's bringing a korban and he's bringing his son as a korban in honor of Hashem and like outdoing what Avraham did, because Avraham did not end up bringing his son, and Mesha with his goyish cup thinks that he's going to outdo him, but no, I never commanded Mesha to do any such thing. When he continues, I didn't speak. Shenema, the pasuk says, he took his firstborn son who would have ruled next after him, and he brought him as an ola on top of the wall over there of the city where he's being besieged. There was a tremendous anger against the Jewish people. So they left him by Yeshuvah La'aretz, and they returned to their land. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, when it tells this story, says the Ketzef Gadol was that the Malachi Asharis are saying to Hashem, look at this, this guy is worshiping, this guy is bringing korbanos like that, or human sacrifices, and you know what, the Jewish people are not really any better, they're doing the same kind of thing as well, so how are you continuing to do nissing for them? And Hashem realized that, Hashem accepted that argument from the Midas Adin, and therefore they lost the war, and they had to give up and leave. And other Mephoshim explain the Ketz of Gadol is actually from the king of Edom, according to them, that the boy who was sacrificed was the son of the king of Edom. So now he's upset. You didn't work harder to protect my son, the crown prince of Edom, and therefore he left, and then the whole thing fell apart. Anyway, the point is that Hashem is saying, Ashalit Sivisi, Mesha thought that he's doing this in my honor. I never commanded him any such thing. V'loy dibarti, Hashem says, when I didn't speak, that refers to the story of Yiftach's daughter. I never spoke to him and told him that I should bring his daughter as a korban. And when he says, and it never entered my mind, that means the Yitzchak ben Avraham, that means the story with Yitzchak with the Akedah. Hashem is saying, even though I told Avraham, it never actually entered my mind that he would act, that Avraham should actually sacrifice him. I only meant, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that he should bring him up there, because I was only doing it in order to test Avraham. In fact, the Malbim on the Pasuk over there brings an interesting point. Asher le tzivisi is the strongest expression. I didn't command. Asher le dibauti is the next. Not only I didn't command, I didn't even speak it. But like also not only that, I didn't even think of it. Therefore, the Gemara is saying them in order. The last of these three stories is Mesha Melech Moyav. The next last is Yiftach. The first one is Abraham. So therefore, Hashem is going in reverse order back in history from Yirmiyahu's times and saying each of these three times that you find a case in Jewish history of human sacrifice, it was not that I never commanded it and I never spoke it, etc. Rashi over here brings from Medrash Tanchuma that actually darshins them differently. The Asher Lo Tzivisi, actually, that Medrash Tanchuma says, refers to Yiftach. Yes, he's a Yid. He's commanded with hundreds of mitzvahs. However, this was not something that I commanded. And then as far as Lo Dibauti, I didn't speak, refers to Mesha. Mesha is a Goy. I wouldn't even speak with him. Mela Yiftach, okay, he wasn't exactly a tzaddik. He was Kali Olam, whatever, but nevertheless, he's for to Yid. If I was going to speak to him, I might have. But Mesha, what would I even have any business speaking to him? And therefore, Lo Dibauti refers to him. Anyway, and Veloy Al Salibi then refers to Yitzchak ben Avraham. So that's the story with Yiftach, and that's what we're saying. In other words, ultimately, this was all caused by that he asked Hashem improperly. He didn't think to say anything kosher for a korban that comes out of my house, and the upshot of his daughter came out. And the further upshot is that he went and fulfilled his neder and his amarat to stick away, rather than realizing that it's not the right thing to do. So the Gemara continues. So we had three examples again of people that shalu shloika hogen. So now comes the connection with our Gemara Tainus. Omer Berechia asked Knesset Yisrael shalu shloika hogen. There's all the Jewish people also at one point asked Hashem for something improperly. But Hashem also answers properly. Hashem answers the Fnim Neshuras Hadin with a good answer, rather than one that would make things difficult for them. Namely, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, the Jewish people, when the Jewish people are ready to do tshuva, the Navi describes what they're going to say, the Neda Nudifal Adas Hashem will know and will run to know Hashem, because Hashem's existence and the fact that Hashem is on our side is as certain as the dawn breaking. And our show explains, in other words, we have like this. We talk about the expression in Chakira, in Jewish philosophy, and it's brought a lot in Chassidus as well. You have Yedias HaMavus and Yedias HaMetzius. You can know what something is, or you can know that it exists. Now, when it comes to things in the physical world, we can have both. We can know that something exists, and then we can actually discover everything we can about it and know its mahus. Hashem, we can never know his mahus, either Yudaitiv or Yisid, but we can only know Hashem's Metzius. So therefore, we're saying, as certain as it is that the dawn breaks every morning, that's how certain it is. Then Keshachon Nochon Mitzoy, that we will be able to find out about the Metzius of Hashem and learn as much as we can about the Metzius of Hashem. And they continue, the Yovei Chageshem Lanu, he'll come to us like rain, to Malkush Yoreh Oretz, and like the Malkush, which is the next piece of the Gemara, explains that Malkush is late rain that usually comes around Nissan time, that waters the earth. So in other words, they're asking that knowledge of Hashem should be for us like the rain. Now, Amalak Kadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem says, Biti, my daughter, so you're asking for something that sometimes is wanted and sometimes is not wanted. Rain is not always a good thing. Like the Gemara is going to mention later on in the Perek, it was actually just in Daf Yomi today as well, that sometimes a day of rain is not really such a pleasant thing. Sometimes it's a bit of a hassle. Sometimes it's a bit of an inconvenience. You're traveling on the road. You have the example we'll have later on in the Masechta of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa carrying a bag of salt. You have various times when rain is a bit of an inconvenience. So rain is not always wanted. And also, of course, there's the fact that rain doesn't always come. Sometimes the rain stops. So you're asking like that. I will be for you, though, instead, like something which is always wanted, name Shanema, Eyachatal Yisrael. As the Pasuk says, I will be like the dew for the Jewish people. And dew is always, we learned before, that Tal Eid Loimiyatzer, that the dew never stops coming. And therefore, in this case, it means that Hashem is saying that I will be something that never stops for you. I'm always going to be available. One of the explanations on that is also that Anaf Yosef brings over here from Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz that we talked about yesterday, that rain and dew symbolize respectively. Rain symbolizes Isserus de la Sata because it comes from water vapor that evaporates from the earth and forms clouds and then they fall, whereas dew represents Isserus de la Ela. So the Jewish people are asking that Hashem's availability for us should be like rain, meaning, in other words, it's going to require a sarusa de wasaka first. We're going to first have to take the step and do tshuva. And Hashem is answering that, no, I'll give you with a sarusa de la'ela. But I'll give you, I will always be available for you, whether you make the preparation or not, I will be for you like dew. And then the Oid Shalosh Loikahogan, then Rabbi Rechia continues that there's another thing also in which the Jewish people also ask for Hashem's presence in an improper way. Omri Lefonov, she says, Rabbi Shalolam, as the Pasuk says at the end of Shir Hashirim, Simeni Kachosam al Libecha, Kachosam al Zreecha. Make me like a seal on your heart and like a seal on your arm. So Omri Lakarish Bochu, Biti, Achelis Dovish, Upamim Nira, Upamim En Nira. So you're asking for something which sometimes is visible and sometimes is not visible. Namely, in other words, it actually describes. So when a person is not dressed, then you can see his arm and you can see his heart, his chest near it. When he's dressed, then you don't see it. So you're implying, in other words, that my connection with you should be only at some time. I instead will do for you, I'll make it for you that it'll be in a way that it always is present, that it's always present and always visible. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Hena kapayim chakisich, Hashem says, I have engraved you on kapayim. Now, one explanation, Rashi says two explanations. One is that kapayim means the palms of the hands, which are always visible. Those are not covered. So therefore, that represents that Hashem is always going to be available to us. The other explanation, Rashi says, is that kapayim can also mean the heavens. We find, for example, the Pasuk, Nisal, the heavens. The heavens. We find, for example, the pasuk nisal vavein, which means, in other words, it actually says it refers to the image of the image of humanity, and specifically, Maharshal says the image of Yaakov Avinu, that it's on Hashem's kisah covered higher even than the heavens. Where so to speak, then the Jewish people are engraved over there. The Rashi says, for example, in Eicha, we have the pasuk Nisal Avenu El Kapoyim, which actually they also, some of the Foshim on the pasuk explain it means we'll lift up our hearts into our hands, we'll offer our hearts and all our thoughts and emotions to Hashem. But Rashi over here is explaining, and the other Foshim on the pasuk also explain it that way. That means we'll lift up our hearts to the heavens to focus on Hashem and do tshuva. So the point is, in other words, it won't be like the arm and like the chest, which sometimes are visible and sometimes not. But rather, Hashem is saying, "I will always be available for you." Maharsha says that this goes together actually with the previous part about the dew. Now you have like this: dew is tal in Hebrew, but we talked about before, you have tal, which is sometimes not a bracha. If you take the letters tal and reverse it, you have lamed tes, which first of all refers to the 39 Malkus, and second of all also the Shurish Lot means to curse, the standard Aramaic for the Shurish for cursing is Lot. So therefore, even do, in other words, can sometimes be positive and sometimes not so positive. So therefore, we're saying Simeni Kachosim Alibecha, Kachosim Alzereecha. We're asking, in other words, there are two kinds of signets. The fact is, Hashem answers, you know what? There are two kinds of signets. You have a signet ring. We learned about this in Rosh Hashanah. You have a kind where it sticks out and therefore it produces a recessed image. And you have the other way around where it's recessed and produces an image in relief. So now, in other words, so that can go either way. So therefore, you're saying that it's something that can go either way. I will be for you, that it's going to be something which is even higher than the whole concept of bracha and kola, the whole concept of Yaakov Avinu, as it actually says, the Odom that's on the Kisah covered, and specifically the Medrash says that's Yaakov Avinu, that never changes, and the same way my relationship with you will never change, and there won't have to be a positive or a negative part, it will always be positive. Anaf Yosef then brings something else over here from Yaris Dvash about it, from Rabbi Yonis and Ivashitz, there are mitzvahs. When we talk about the heart, it means mitzvahs that a person does with kavanah. When we talk about the arm, we mean mitzvahs that a person does just mechanically, just with the arm, but without kavanah of the heart. So now we're asking Simeni Kachosim Al Libecha. We're saying, Hashem, put us like a signet on your heart. In other words, we delude ourselves into thinking that our mitzvahs are all with kavanah. And Hashem is answering, come on, you know good and well that's not like that. But nevertheless, I will do for you, akapayim chakrisich, since we see that the Jewish people are always doing Torah and mitzvahs, and even the Poshe Yisrael are full of mitzvahs kerimon, so therefore I will engrave that as a permanent thing, akapayim, on the hands or on the heavens, as the case may be. In other words, even though you may not be living up to what you're supposed to in terms of kavana of the heart, but I'm going to set that aside, and I'm going to constantly give you credit for the mitzvahs that you do, even if they're only mechanical.
When they were in Midbar, they asked for the meat, the
basin,
that was
Shulokahogan,
right?
That was asking Shulokahogan, but then that was something else. I mean, they were asking to complain. Here we're talking about people that asked sincerely, so that would probably be why the Gemara doesn't mention that. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Tesvav Ir. We're going to have the concept of Torah Chadoshim, that a new dimension of Torah is going to come from Hashem. That means we're not just talking about a higher level. We're talking about a whole new concept, which is also, and from that in the world, just like we said before, that the world, that Torah is the blueprint of the world. Therefore, when there's going to be a whole new dimension of Torah, then that also brings about, as various psukim say, that there's also going to be a new heavens and new earth. Shemayim Chadoshim Ba'aretz Chadosh, like we have in the Torah of Shabbos or Shchodesh. So now the Rebbe continues, then our deeds and what we are avoida that we do to bring the Gola also has to be in a way of chiddush. It's not just that you add something on top of what you did before. The avoida itself has to be in a whole new way as chadoshim mamash. And then that brings about this chiddush that we're talking about of Mashiach's times. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos. So we talked about yesterday as far as sweeping the floor. So actually what it is there are posts of the Alter Rebbe then in Shulchan Aruch mentioned, there's an opinion that says that that you are allowed to sweep the floor if it's not an earthen floor. If it's an earthen floor, you're definitely not allowed to, because sikkuresha, that you're going to be smoothing out holes in the ground. If it's not an earthen floor, the Alter Rebbe brings opinion that you are allowed to, but then opinions that not, because you may confuse it with an earthen floor. And the Alter Rebbe says that in Medinas Elu, in these countries, we're no to be mako on that, unless, like we said, if you do it with a shinui, like using a feather, for example. The Alter Rebbe also points out, by the way, you can't use a broom whose bristles break off, because then you have a different problem of soiser. In any case, though, some poskim achronim, including the Ketzos HaShulchan mentions this, and then the Mishnah Berurah mentions this, that in places where most, if not all, of the floors are in fact tiled or wooden or whatever floors, so there's no real possibility of mixing them up with any other kind, then there may be reason to be makel, and that is why we do see lemaisa nowadays. We do see some people sweep their living room or whatever on Shabbos. Especially yesterday was brought up the point about matzah crumbs on Pesach. So there is a certain heter for that, because nowadays next to nobody has dirt floors, at least not in Western countries. If you're a shliach in Cambodia or whatever, it might be a bit more of an issue. So another din in that connection, as far as the dirt on Shabbos, and as far as improving it, you're not allowed. Another minute. You're not allowed to, if you have a plowed field, you're not allowed to go to the bathroom there on Shabbos, because then you're improving the soil, you're fertilizing it basically. That's even if it's your own field. If it's somebody else's, even on weekdays, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. That's later. That's a din in Choshen Mishnah. I'm